The Ashes Podcast with Mikey Holding. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast. Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Yes, hello once again. We're looking forward to the third Ashes test at Old Trafford with the former West Indian bowler and currently part of the excellent Sky Sports commentary team, Mikey Holding. Morning, Mikey. Bit of rain around this week, unfortunately. I know you've been enjoying the sunny weather.
Yeah, the weather has been great since July started, but as we know, it can't last forever. No, and it seems as if some rain is going to be involved this weekend.
Yeah indeed. I mentioned the obviously you're a big part of that Sky commentary team. Thoroughly entertaining during the series so far. Must be, before we get onto the cricket, must be great to be a part of that. It must be like, almost like being back in the dressing room, isn't it? Plenty of fun to be had with those guys.
Yeah, it is. We have a great team, and we all get along quite well together. Sometimes you'll hear people jibing at NASA was saying, or you know, something like that. But the guys get along very well. It's a great company to work with, and we have some great guys in the commercial box. We have a good friendship going on.
Whatever people think of DRS, Mikey, and the controversy we've had so far, one thing you can be assured of, it does bring quite a lot of fun to the commentary box, because there's some good disagreements among you guys as well.
Yes. Well, you'll always have people that will have different views. And nobody in the commentary box is afraid to express their view, which is good. You know, you don't have too much sitting on the fence going on there.
Exactly. Yeah, lots of egos in there as well. Lots of big characters. Well, just very briefly, as someone who obviously bowled at the very highest level and played Test cricket at the very highest level, what is your view on DRS? Would you have liked it in your day? Would you have liked to have had it?
Definitely. There are certain aspects of it that I'm not particularly keen on. You know, I'm not very keen on the projected path. Once a ball has hit something, the calculation that takes place after that. That I'm not very keen on, but it's part of it, and most people accept it, so we have to accept it and move on with it. Yeah. But the other aspects of it I'm quite happy with. That's the way the ball has pitched, because that is definite. It has struck the pad, or, you know, those sort of things. Yes. Those things are quite definite. I have no problem with it. Mm. I think a lot of problems are with the DRS is that people using the system are not using it correctly. Yeah. For one, the DRS was brought in to try and get rid of the very bad decisions. And yet you have players using it as a guessing game, hoping that they can get away with something, or, oh, I'm not too sure about this, so let me try referring it. That was not why it was brought in. But that's human nature. People will try and get away with things. Yeah. You saw even Stuart Broad hitting the ball straight in the man's hand. The fielders were leaving the field. Australians were leaving the field, and yet he wants to refer it because he knew one referral was left. So it's just a matter of him using it because it was there. That was not what the system was made for. And we also have some third umpires that are not quite using it the right way either. Their interpretation of what's going on, because the DRS was brought in and it says you should only overturn what has taken place on the field, the decision on the field, if you are 100% sure that the decision on the field was incorrect. If you are not 100% sure, you do not overturn it. And yet we see umpires overturning decisions on the field with a little bit of guesswork.
Yeah, yeah.
They shouldn't.
I don't understand why the system isn't used. I don't know if you watch much rugby, Mikey. Rugby league, for instance, it's down to the referee's decision whether he reviews. And what they tend to do is review everything unless it's absolutely clear. I don't understand why the DRS system isn't used on every dismissal if needed, rather than it being open to the captains and only a limited amount available. It should be, if it's to get decisions right, surely they should all be scrutinised.
That is a way of going, but I don't think that will work out too well, because, you know, cricket is different than rugby. Cricket is 6 hours of play. Mm. If you're going to review every decision, you know, sometimes in a day they get 14 wickets. Yeah, that's going to be a very, very long day of cricket if you're going to review every decision. Mm. Because, you know, sometimes they take a bit of time to really get every angle and to look at them properly. What I would like to see, and this is not my idea as a matter of fact, I heard this from Michael Atherton. I think this is his idea, and I certainly like the idea. What I would like to see is both teams having two as it is now, but the umpires also having two.
Right.
So you'd have six opportunities. But apart from that, Leo, I would love to see the players accepting why the DRS was brought into play, and stop gambling with it and stop using it as a guessing game.
Yeah, that's very fair. Let's move on to the cricket. There are loads of series bets available. We're going to concentrate on the third Ashes test, but loads of series bets available. And that one, if you listen to Ollie's podcast, you'll know that Mikey said it was his bet of the summer was for the Aussies not to win a test. That was a nice price, and obviously it's not available at the price it was, and it looks like it'll come off. Let's just start with the outrights on this one, Mikey, first of all, before we get into who will be the top performers. The odds have surprised me again. I mean, before the last test, England were 4-5 to win the test, when a lot of people thought that maybe Aussies had put in their best performance of the summer already at Trent Bridge. We saw them destroyed by England, really. It's embarrassing at times. Yet England are still 10-11 to win the third Ashes test. That we're told that the pitch and the wicket will be very similar to the ones that we've seen already. The draw is 13-8 and Australia are 9-2. Did you see anything in the second test that would think that England aren't a good bet at 10-11 to win this one?
No, I didn't see anything in the second test, but I would suspect that England are 10-11, and as you see, the draw is a lot shorter than it was in the last test because of the weather. There are prospects of rain. The last test match, I think the draw was 5-2.
Yeah.
Because the weather was set to be clear. 5 days of cricket, you're absolutely sure of getting a result with these two teams. But now with the weather possibly going to be playing a part, the draw has shortened dramatically to 13-8. And that is why England is 10-11. I think in the last test match, Australia were also 9-2. So they haven't shortened at all. Because I think most people know or have realised now that they won't win any of the test matches.
Mm.
But I think it's the weather that why England are 10-11. And if you can get someone to push the clouds away, 10-11 is a fantastic bet.
I don't know anyone in that kind of level, Mikey. So effectively, if it is England versus the weather, and you know the weather forecast can be unreliable. We know that. But I mean, the forecast isn't for heavy, prolonged rain. It's more for scattered showers, isn't
yes.
it? So can England? The question then is: can England bowl Australia out twice, even if it's a shorter? Even if, let's say, we take out as much as a day of cricket.
The thing is, you can add an hour each day.
Mm-hmm.
So England have every chance of getting enough play to win this test match.
Yeah.
You're just not too sure about up in Manchester. As you know, Manchester can be very rainy. You're not absolutely sure what you're going to be getting with the weather. I would think, though, that if people really want to take a risk, 10-11 would be a good bet. Because with the amount of time that can be added to each day's play, plus, as you said, Lee, the weather prospects are for showers, not heavy downpours, mm-hmm. you have every chance of England winning again.
Let's have a look at the top performers, and we'll start with England. The top batsmen, first of all. One key thing that we've noticed this series already is that England haven't been fantastic with the bat. There've been some mini collapses and some poor displays from some. But what they have got is that there's usually one or two who perform and perform exceptionally well. If it's not Ian Bell, it's Joe Root. If it's not Joe Root, it might be Jonathan Trott. If Jonathan Trott isn't on form, maybe Alistair Cook steps up. It's quite a difficult market to pick, is what I'm saying here. We've got Alistair Cook and Jonathan Trott at 7-2, both joint favourites. Then we've got Ian Bell and Joe Root and Kevin Peterson at 4-1. James Taylor, who's been included in the squad, is 7-1. Johnny Bairstow, 9s. Matt Prior, 12-1. Then we get up to 40-1 and bigger for the tail end, basically. Where would you be looking? Do you think maybe someone's due some runs here? Who would you be looking at as England's top batsman in the first innings?
Well, as I just said, in one of the top six, you can get some runs. You know, I would suspect, though, that Peterson will be looking to get some runs in this test match. He hasn't made any runs yet, and I get the impression that we heard about this calf injury because he was just out of the limelight. Nobody was talking about Kevin Peterson. Everyone was talking about Joe Root. And we know Kevin Peterson has a huge ego. He's going to want to play this test match, and he's going to want to make runs so that his name gets back into the highlights film. His name gets back into the headlines of the newspapers. So Kevin Peterson at 4-1, I would think, is a good bet. But again, I'm going to go back on a saver with Jonathan Trott. I do not like Cook getting runs in this series. I said that from the very beginning. I wouldn't backing him to be the top run scorer in any of these test matches because I think the Australians have pretty much worked out how to bowl to him by keeping the ball reasonably full, nothing short for him to pull or cut. And as we know, Bell, Root, those guys are good players. They can make runs as well. But I think Kevin Peterson just wants to get back into the headlines. And as I said, Trott is a good player coming in one down. I'll be putting my money on those two. Huge bet on Peterson and Aseba on trot.
As for the bowlers, James Anderson and Graham Swann are kind of taking it in turns to destroy the Aussies. James Anderson, quite honestly, said he was a bit tired after the first test, and maybe the second test he felt that a little bit, and so Graham Swann steps up. I think this is really interesting, Mikey, because you've got Jimmy Anderson's home ground. He knows exactly how to get the best out of this ground, and we know there'll be swing and probably a bit of reverse swing as well. And you've got Graham Swann bowling on these tracks, which seem to be very favourable for the spinners. You look at Simon Kerrigan took 12 wickets in a match for Lancashire, didn't he, only 2 weeks ago. I know that'll be on a different wicket to the test wicket, but you'd imagine there wouldn't be that much difference in them. James Anderson 7-4, Graham Swann is 11-4. This is for the first innings, by the way. Stuart Broad 100-30, Chris Tremlett 7-2, Monty Panesar, who's been put into the squad, also 7-2 if they do play two spinners. Breslin 7-2 and Joe Root 33-1. To be fair, he didn't look too shabby in that last test. This is first innings only, so maybe Graham Swann would be later in the match, do you think, or where would you be looking?
No, I wouldn't put Graham Swann necessarily later in the match. I think he has a good chance of getting wickets in the first innings as well. And you say that this is Jimmy Anderson's home ground. I can't remember Jimmy Anderson playing a game at Old Trafford for a very long time.
True.
And also, Lee, they have changed the direction of the pitch. They have switched the pitch around. It's now the pavilion is now right behind the bowler's arm. So these are new circumstances. A new pitch, new circumstances, a new ground with new stands around. Not too sure how that will affect the wind and the swing and that sort of a thing. I don't think the spinner has any worries about whether it's running north, south or east, west, or whether the ball is swinging or not. So I wouldn't rule out Graham Swann. Jimmy Anderson, fantastic bowler. And the second test match, you could see that he was still feeling the effects of the first test. And he'll be coming back refreshed and ready for this third test match. But, you know, at 11-4, I'll still have a little bit on Graham Swann. Jimmy Anderson has to be favourite. I can't blame the bookmakers for making him favourite. But a little bit on Graham Swann wouldn't go too wrong. I'm not suggesting him as a major bet, but just a little bit at 11-4, you wouldn't go too wrong.
As for the Aussies, the top batsman price is Michael Clarke at the top of the market, as you'd expect, at 11-4. Has got a little bit of a niggly injury, though, so that might hinder him some. Shane Watson, 4-1. Chris Rogers, 9-2. The interesting one is David Warner at 5-1, who is... we're recording this on Monday, and he's travelling back to join up with the Test party after having been with the Australia A side. Made 190-odd for them. I think a few other players made runs in that innings, so it's not too be viewed as a sensational innings, but I think there were runs to be had on that pitch that David Warner scored his runs on. Still interesting though, at 5-1, Ed Cowan 11-2, Phil Hughes 11-2, so is Usman Khawaja, who looked quite confident, didn't he, Mikey, actually in that second, one of the few players who looked to have some confidence. And Stephen Smith, too, the one who 8-1, who scored runs in the tour match, that they've been the warm-up match for this test match. So it's not so much who will score the runs, it's who, you know, who can you pick out from the list, I guess, Mikey, isn't it, at the moment?
Well, yeah, it's not easy. You know, Michael Clarke is a class player. At some point, he's going to get some runs. You know, if he doesn't get runs, Australia struggles terribly. They can hardly manage 250 runs if he doesn't get runs on the board. And I would suggest that it's about time that he did. Again, he's favourites, and you can't blame the bookmakers for making him favourite, because he is, as far as I'm concerned, the only class player there. Khawaja, as I said, looked okay in the second innings of the last test match. But up to now, we're not absolutely sure who Australia are going to be selecting. Warner, as I said, is on his way back. He might come in, he might not. He might have an unchanged batting lineup from the last test match. Warner might come in, and you're not too sure who would go out. You know, Ed Cowan hasn't made a lot of runs. Khawaja looked okay in the second innings. At the same time, Philip Hughes has made a little bit of runs in one innings. So you don't know what combination they're going to use. Chris Rogers, who knows? I think the only constant there is Michael Clarke. You're absolutely sure that he will play. Yeah. You're absolutely sure he's a class player. So if, and that's a big if, you're going to put your money in on that market, it has to be Michael Clarke. There are other markets that you can choose, but if you want to get involved in that market, it has to be Michael Clarke.
Yeah, fair shout. As for the bowlers, Peter Siddle is the favourite, 9-4. Ryan Harris, 5-2. Mitchell Starc is 3-1. Jackson Bird, 7-2. James Faulkner, 4-1. Nathan Lyon, 9-2. Will he get his chance finally. Ashton Agar, who's disappointed with the ball, 6-1. Shane Watson, 6s, and Stephen Smith, 16-1. I know Ryan Harris has attracted a little bit of attention in this market. He'll run all day, won't he, Michael? He'll run and run and run and bowl and bowl and bowl. Has he got the skill to deliver the wickets as well, though?
Yeah, he has the skill. What he hasn't got in recent times is the fitness. He missed the first test match because I think they realized that he would not have been able to play both the first and the second with 3 days in between. So they picked him in the second test match knowing that he would have 9-10 days between the second and the third. So he should be fine going into this third test match. And I would suspect he might be the top wicket taker again. He's a good bowler. He's a class act. He's 33 years old, which is no youngster for a fast bowler, but he hasn't got a lot of miles under him because he has had a few injury problems. So I would think Ryan Harris is the way to go. Now, Siddle will bowl all day, as we all know that, but I do not think Siddle is as classy a bowler or as good a bowler as Ryan Harris. So I would go with Ryan Harris. As for the spinners, I'm not too sure you'll see Ashton Agar in this test match. Yeah. His game is to take wickets, not to get runs, and he has been getting runs and not taking wickets. So I would suspect that he might not be in this game. They might think, well, he's a youngster, he can develop, but they have to try and win a test match. They have to try and take 20 wickets. So I think he might be on the sidelines and you might see Nathan Lyon coming in.
Yeah. And Nathan Lyon, you know, maybe Nathan Lyon is suffering from a bit of a dent in confidence, understandably, but again, he's a good bowler, isn't he? He's taken a lot of wickets, hasn't he, Mikey?
The last series they played in India, he did well.
Yeah.
And to take wickets against Indians who are very good against spin, you should have thought, well, he has done it against India, although they lost every test match. He himself performed well. That they would have selected him here in England because it's not that the pitches have been green and damp. They have been very dry and brown. So he should have been selected in my book.
You've gone for England on the test. Just one final thing. I've just had a note in from one of the PR team. There's still quite a lot of money drifting in, Mikey. William Hill are offering a bet that covers both of the Ashes series, which is for England to win 10-0. I mean that's reliant on a lot of things, weather and obviously. And, you know, I guess what I was about to ask you is, would you extend your prediction of Australia not to win a test across the home Ashes for Australia?
Definitely.
As well?
Definitely.
Right.
I don't see them winning a test match in the 10 matches that England are going to play.
That would be...
can't see it.
That would be unheard of, wouldn't it? I mean, that would be horrific to be an Australian cricket player with the home media scrutinising them, wouldn't it? I mean, there's so much pressure on them then. Wow.
Well, I have a son who is living in Australia. He was actually born here in England, but he lives in Australia because he's married to an Aussie in Brisbane. And he sent me an email yesterday, I think it was, saying that he took out his British passport and he was brushing it off in front of his friends.
Fantastic.
So he's having a good time down there.
I bet. Mikey, it's been a pleasure to talk to you as always. Enjoy the third test and we'll speak to you before the next one.
Okay, Lee, thanks a lot.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.